Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have a ton on today's show. Heavy on the NFL draft early in today's show with Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst and insider. Of course, Brock, former NFL quarterback as well. Breaking down quarterbacks. With the draft now just about a month away, Paxton Lynch visiting with the Eagles today. Cardale Jones with the Cardinals. Paxton Lynch, Lee Steinberg telling us the Cardinals interviewed Paxton. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, the likes, the dislikes, maybe some other quarterbacks that are on Brock's view. Every year we have Brock on to break down quarterbacks, and he's always dead spot on. So Brock Huard will join us at 10:20. Bob Brenly will be on board with us today. Good to visit with BB about the Diamondbacks season, about ready to get underway. And I want to talk to Bob about preparation, because I think for many of you, we take Bob a little bit for granted. He's so good. And how does he become so good? BB's not on Twitter, is he, Eric? I don't see, I see these fake BBs.
Yeah, he is not on Twitter. Nope. No social media.
So he doesn't do any prep through social media, which is fine. I mean, is he a guy, though, that does he go down into the dugouts? Does he text? I don't know. How does he go about prepping to be? Am I right that he's a little taken for granted here in the Valley?
No, I mean, I think the people that watch sports consistently in this market would agree that he is one of, if not the top analysts here in the Valley.
Yeah,
I don't think he's taken for granted. I think he's really good, and I think if you ask people who's the best analyst in town,
no, I'm not doing that.
They're probably going to say Bob Brenly or Eddie Johnson, somewhere around those lines. So, Tyson Nash. I mean, we're lucky we have good analysts.
Ron Wolfley,
absolutely.
Jeff Enraphorst. No, I mean, we do, but and I'm not comparing what goes on here in the Valley. I'm just saying, in general, you turn the television on, and there's Bob there keeping you comfy for about 150 games out of the year. So, and I want to talk to Bob about Greinke and just some things with Wellington Castile working with Greinke from the former catcher's point of view, because I think it's very important. John Wilner's going to be with us today. And so John is a college football and basketball writer. There are certain people in social media that I encourage you to follow from time to time. I don't sit here and bang you over the head with it every day. But if you go to Wilner Hotline, and John is very well thought of in the college football and basketball community. He writes for the San Jose Mercury News, but really smart guy. And with the Pac-12 now in full bore spring football, by my count, we have to have a new quarterback, well, obviously at Arizona State. USC has to have a new quarterback. Oregon has to have a new quarterback. Stanford has to have a new quarterback. Cal has to have a new quarterback. So I kind of want to get an update from John on the Pac-12. We do a ton of college football here. And just what he's hearing around the spring football workouts. That'll come up at 10:50. So, jam-packed show today. I watched the Suns last night. And then I watched the D'Angelo Russell booing show. That was great. That was just awesome. And so I'm watching the game last night. And I started to look at where the team is. Because, mercifully, the end is near for this season. And in my opinion, Earl Watson's not going to be the guy, but that's just my opinion. I don't have anybody down there that says he's not coming back or anything along those lines. We're just assuming he's keeping the bench warm. And, you know, when you watch the Suns play, you have to ask yourself the question, if you're doing this the right way, then you would pitch this to people and say, we want you to come coach a team that has a future star. I'm not going to say Devin Booker is going to be a superstar. I'm not going to do that. We're too quick to do that. But I do believe he's on track to become one of the very best players in the NBA at his position. You could make the argument here in the last 6-8 weeks that he's been as good as any rookie in the league. You really could make that argument. Now, part of that is I think he's been challenged. Has he responded to the coaching change? Sure, you could say that. But really, if you're going to send the right message, you can't just say we're promoting the interim that's won 20 games, a team that's won 20 games and give the excuse, well, we just had a bunch of injuries and we believe he gives us the best chance to win. You can't do that. And it's nothing against Earl Watson. I think he's got to know he's just here in the interim. And you look at a guy like Terry Stotts up at Portland. Terry Stotts probably going to win Coach of the Year, or Dwayne Casey at Toronto. In my opinion, those are the two. You can't give it to Golden State because Steve Kerr didn't coach the whole year. Think about that. Luke Walton was just as big a part of the reason for the Warriors about ready to go on and break the record, as I believe they're going to do, as Steve Kerr. So you can't give it to him. You can't give it to the coach at Cleveland because they fired the first guy. And the second guy, I don't know if you've seen all the nonsense going on in Cleveland. Eric, have you seen any of this stuff?
I have, yeah.
I mean, come on.
I know.
He's standing there trying to talk during a timeout. LeBron's 3 feet away, 4 feet away from him, looking out on the court. He's not playing, and then he's coaching.
Yeah, yeah. He's almost taking over huddles. There are times where Lou's trying to call plays, and LeBron's over there, like, kind of diagramming his own play with half the team. That's good. That's a good way to go about things.
And was it Shumpert threw a towel or put his towel on the coach's shoulder when he ran back out on the court? Did you see that?
I mean, come on. That does not surprise me.
Come on. Now, if he threw the towel, he'd be suspended. And is that because that Shumpert had known Lou as an assistant coach and has taken advantage of him? I don't know that. Look, the easy thing to do for the Suns is to say, well, we've had better success, and we're going to give Earl Watson the job. That's not the way that this should go, in my opinion. The hot name that's going to be out there and is already out there is Luke Walton. Why would Luke Walton come to Phoenix? I don't want to sit here and denigrate where I live, but look, the best job that's going to become available in this offseason clearly to me is Minnesota. The thing is, you're living in Minnesota. So is Luke Walton going to enjoy freezing his tail off, but yet have an immensely talented roster? Like, there's no comparison between rosters from Minnesota to Phoenix. There's none. It's a much better job. Houston, okay? Houston, if Dwight Howard goes back to Orlando in this offseason, maybe that takes out the 800-pound anchor on that franchise. Or maybe it's James Harden is just doing what James Harden is going to do, which isn't play defense. My point is, in the Lakers' job, is Byron Scott really going to be the guy there next year? So if you're Luke Walton, you're the biggest name that's out there that apparently is ready to go. Or is it just he had such an immensely talented franchise of players, group of players on his roster, we don't know if he's that good of a coach. What kind of coach do you need to bring here? Is it going to be the disciplinarian, the heavy-handed guy? Is it getting back to what it once was under the Mike D'Antoni era? Is Robert going to go back to the future? And then it's who is going to ultimately make this decision? You know, just because we don't see Lon Babby showing up at press conferences annoying me doesn't mean that he's not somewhere around there collecting a paycheck. Until I see the release that says they've parted ways with him, somewhere, somehow, he's got to be involved, unfortunately. Ryan McDonough? So they landed Devin Booker. That doesn't mean he's got it figured out. At the end of the day, it appears to me that it's still going to be Robert that pulls the trigger on this. So if you're a big name coach, and it's really time to start looking at this. If you're a Suns fan, you have to start saying to yourself, who are we going to have to lead us into the future that we feel really good about? Would Mike D'Antoni come back here, as some fans have asserted? I don't think so, but, you know, nothing would surprise me if the dollar figure and the decimal point are in the right places. So, you know, as I'm watching them last night, and they throw the ball away 22 times against stinking Milwaukee, they're just not good. And I'm glad that the season's almost to an end, but I have really good news. I actually thought for a brief moment, about getting tickets for tomorrow night's game because my guy, Markieff Morris, is back in town tomorrow night.
I'm so glad you reminded me of that in your show notes. It completely
cannot
spaced
wait.
On that. Yeah, Markieff Morris.
My guy.
That's a big story.
What do you think he's going to say to Paul?
Probably nothing.
He's going to say, I enjoyed my time here and I moved on.
Maybe.
Or
he could be like his brother and just completely throw the franchise right under the bus.
His brother won't shut up.
Yeah.
Like, dude. We know you weren't happy here. Move on. And now I have a public service announcement for all of you coaches in high school and college, okay? And even some of you pro coaches as well. If you have players on your team that are into social media, which means every last one of them, please put a picture of D'Angelo Russell up in your locker room and say, when you screw around with this, this could happen to you. Like, talk about the poster child of poster childs. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later on in the show. Plus, the Masters starts next week and much more. But up next, Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst and insider, on the quarterbacks in this year's draft class. That's next. Here now is Brock Huard joining us from Seattle, college football analyst insider with ESPN. He also has his own daily show on ESPN 710 in Seattle. He was stuck at the DMV yesterday. And so I'm sure he's grumpy. A grumpy Brock is a good Brock. How are you?
You know, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. And like all golfers tell you when they hit the ball really well. Do you ever notice that, Brad? The golfers are the only professionals that tell you how good they played. But I was at the DMV, so that's kind of one side of the spectrum. And my coworkers were all out. We had a 70-degree, very rare sunny day in Seattle. And I met them on the seventh hole at the golf course. And I shot the best nine holes. I shot a 38. And I've never, ever broke 40. So you're never going to find me in better spirits. The sun's still shining. I slept great. And I may be in the best mood, Brad, you've ever talked to me in years and years of doing this.
Well, the segment's over then, because it's not going to be any fun. It's always great when you beat up on
people. I got to run. I got to get back to the course.
Yeah, see you later.
You know, when you shoot a 38, you think you can play. And then you shoot 50, and you realize you still stink. So I got to go. Have a great time. Good catching up.
ESPN college football analyst Brock Huard with us. Okay, so let's go through these quarterbacks. We do this every year. The one that catches your eye the most that could be a first rounder, do you like Wentz? Do you like Goff? Do you like Lynch?
The only one I would take in the first round is Wentz. So I've kind of been on the record saying this for a few months, and I won't really deviate, even though as you get closer, it won't happen and I will be wrong. And the other two will more than likely go in the first round. But for me, I think Wentz is probably the only one I would take in the first. I don't know if I'd really have to do my homework to take him in the top 10, but I think he's the one that's got enough raw goods. Jared Goff scares me. He never won a game in college that you put and say that's a milestone win. They won that one because of Jared Goff. I can't find one of him. Now, he started with an atrocious program, starting it over there, and eventually they get to a bowl game. But as far as a quality win, where if you would have had the backup in, that they would have won or not won if Goff wasn't playing, I can't find that on his entire resume. That bothers me. Paxton Lynch, I've kind of heard enough of. I think he's a kid still figuring out who he is, how comfortable he is in his own skin. I think those two guys, in my opinion, are best in that 30 to 40 range, right, where Colin Kaepernick and Andy Dalton went years ago before people went nuts on quarterbacks in the first round and overvalued them. To me, those two could be prime candidates in that kind of early second. They'll go in the first, and I think it will be a mistake.
How much of it is hype machine on Paxton Lynch? His agent's Lee Steinberg, who's a friend, and I love Lee to death, but I see Lee going back to his roots where he's drumming up interest and doing it the right way. That's what an agent is supposed to do. How much of it do you think is the agent stirring the pot for him versus Goff and Wentz being below the radar?
Maybe a little bit, but I think more importantly, he's nearly 6'7" with a really nice arm. And you know what? He had marquee wins, including beating Ole Miss, which very few people did. And you can say that was because of him. So he has got a few things on his ledger, much like Goff. Started out building the program, has played a ton of snaps, was kind of the rock and the stabilizing force as they turned it. And again, this isn't to just rip them down or say they're not going to be great players. They're going to be top, you know, I'd probably put them in the top 40, top 35 of an incredibly deep class of defensive linemen, some offensive linemen, some other really fine football players. But you just get so hyped on these quarterbacks. There is such a demand and such a need because your life in the NFL is different if you don't have one. And that's why everybody reaches every single season for them. And I think it's a mistake.
You know, the Cardinals here are bringing Cardale Jones in. And I don't know how much you saw of them this season of Ohio State. You traveled around the country. What do you make out of Cardale Jones?
Yeah, I saw their pro day. I've been with Cardale off the field on a couple other little occasions. We were at this All-Star Challenge a month and a half ago in Dallas. I know some people that are around him an awful lot. I think he is a guy that needs to go late to the right place, and he's got a bazooka of an arm. the fact that he could vertical jump 35 inches at the combine at 250 pounds tells you kind of the caliber of raw athlete that you're dealing with. I mean, he's super special. In fact, at that pro day, I ran into an offensive coordinator in the NFL, and I said, man, he would be a real fit. It wasn't Arizona, mm-hmm. and it wasn't the Seahawks. It was somebody else. And I said, geez, he would be a fit in your guys' system, huh, with all the speed you got? And he said, yes, he would. The problem was he had too good a day today, and he's not probably going to be there when we need him late. So I think you're probably looking at a fifth-rounder, a sixth-rounder. It would be very intriguing. And Bruce Arians' system has everything that Bruce loves. It's much more physically gifted than I think a Drew Stanton or a Lindley or some of the other guys that have come through. I think he's got more football sense than Logan Thomas that they drafted out of Virginia Tech. It's a better feel. He won huge games and huge moments. There is a lot to like. There are some concerns about his overall leadership of men. And you can make many excuses and explanations. JT Barrett, Urban Meyer, you had other alpha males. He was just kind of left in the wind a little bit. But from a pure physical skill set, I think a Bruce Arians would be very enamored with what that kid brings to the table. Thus, he's visiting, and thus, he's probably on their board later in the draft.
Talking with Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst and insider. They've already visited with Paxton Lynch. And I think that there's going to be another visit with him. Lynch still has to have his pro day. Brock, how much do you weigh pro days in on this whole thing? Or is this a made-for-TV scripted event?
Yeah, very little. I put very little, other than how do you interact. And I think I've learned this, Brad, to be honest with you, over kind of my years of doing this and trying to get into the mind and understand how the John Schneiders and the Kimes and the guys that do this at a high level and have had a lot of success doing it and finding kicks and finding the Dayon Buchanan, finding the difference makers that others don't. And it's not the 50 or 75 throws. They know what he can do there. He's done it in tape. He's done it at the combine. This is about how he interacts. This isn't about what Lee Steinberg crafts either, because he is brilliant. I remember talking to Lee 20 years ago when I was coming out. He's a smart guy mm-hmm. who knows how to best position his player. This is about getting that player and really seeing, as I said earlier to you, how comfortable is Paxton Lynch in his own skin? How much is it about Paxton and not about what he's supposed to say, not about how he's supposed to carry himself, not about how Tom Brady carries himself, so I'm carrying himself this way. Just how comfortable is Paxton Lynch in his own skin? I think that will be the biggest question answered over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and nothing to do anything with how he physically throws or runs or does any of that which you see at a pro day.
How about the other quarterbacks in this class that you really like, or is it just average class at best, or is there a name or two I've left off with you?
No, I think it's got a bunch of intrigue. I think this is a middle-round, very rich draft that if you were 20 years ago, before all of what you said, this hype machine about the quarterback position, mm-hmm. and you felt comfortable taking guys in the second, third, fourth, or fifth round, I think there's a bunch of quality guys. I think Connor Cook, and I've compared him to one of my old teammates, Matt Hasselbeck, I think there's some real similarities. I mean, he's almost 6'5". He won so many huge games. He's a tough guy. He played through injury at the end. You know, I think he's a very intriguing fit in the right spot. And as long as huge expectations aren't heaped on him and he can continue to grow and develop, I think he's a nice prospect. I think Dak Prescott is equally the greatest player in the history of Mississippi State football. And what he did for Dan Mullen and getting them to marquee January 1st games, and that was on his shoulders. And with as many dual threat and run around systems as you're starting to see infiltrate the NFL, he's an intriguing prospect. And a Hackenberg in the middle rounds to late rounds had some of the God-gifted ability that not a lot of folks have with broad shoulders, 6'5", throw it all over the yard. But he's broken emotionally and I think a little bit mentally with what he went through. So I think there's some very good intrigue in the middle rounds. I just am not a fan of reaching, never have been, haven't been for the last few years, of the Jake Lockers, Christian Ponders, EJ Manuels, these guys that get picked in the first round when they're not first-round talents.
Okay, so last question then. If you're drafting, you're the GM, and you need a quarterback, who's the guy you want this year? The guy you want?
It'd be Carson Wentz. Yeah, I think it'd be Carson Wentz. Okay. He's been such a winner. His arm is different than every other one. Everybody, you know, I chat with some folks that are around that John Gruden camp, and it's not just what you see on the video there that spend that entire 7, 8, 9 hours. By far, he is overwhelmed everybody around them, the producers, the directors. That's what I look for. That's what I want to see when I dig in. Because, you know, that's, as I said earlier, you got to figure out what this position is much kind of. I love what Bruce Arians said at the combine. We're measuring the brain and the heart, or we're trying to do it. And nothing that you're going to see at this combine is going to do that on film. And when that's been done with Carson Wentz, the people that I trust sure come back with rave reviews with those two muscles.
As always, good to visit with you. Thanks.
I don't know if the brain's a muscle, so you maybe you don't have to make fun of me with that one, but you know where I was going.
I know you're going. See ya. Brock Heard with us there for a couple of minutes. Good stuff, as always, breaking it down. Bob Brenly's on the other side, Diamondbacks television analyst. His thoughts on the upcoming season, none better than BB in my opinion, and that is next. And then John Wilner from the Wilner Hotline on college football around the Pac-12. Also, John's in the Bay Area, the reaction on Herb Sendek being hired over at Santa Clara. I'm going to get to John on that too as we continue on. Brad Sussmatt's Football AZ is on tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. Of course, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmatt Baseball Show is on this week as well on five different affiliates across the Fox Sports family. Appreciate their partnership too. Back with more after this timeout. That's time to bring on board one of our favorite people in all of sports, and that's Bob Brenly, the Diamondbacks television analyst. He's really, really good at what he does and does it so well. And I don't want to say effortlessly because I know you put in a lot of time and effort. I want to start on that front, BB, as we get into the season. If you can take some time, because we've got some time on this show, that's the beauty of doing what we do. If you're comfortable enough doing it, go through the preparation for how you go about a game day broadcast. I'm just curious, when does it start? Where do you go? How do you prep? If you could go through that process.
Well, I think for a lot of broadcasters, like a lot of baseball fans, it starts just watching ball games. You know, there's a game on every night. If you have the MLB package, you can watch any game you want on any given night. So in preparation for a series, I try to watch the opposing team as often as I can. And then, of course, come game day, you get to the ballpark. You talk to your own manager and coaches, see if there's anything new going on. Are any of the players working on anything specifically? Is anybody maybe nursing a minor injury that might change the way players are used during the course of the game? The visiting team, usually the best source of information for the visiting team or the opposing team is the other broadcaster, because mm-hmm. they do the same thing that I do in preparation for a game. And they can kind of get us up to speed quickly on who's been swinging the bat well, who's been slumping, what order in the bullpen does the manager use relief pitchers, who's the closer, who's the setup guy, who's the left-handed specialist, who's the right-handed ground ball pitcher. And, you know, it really becomes second nature. When you spend your life around the ballpark and watching games on TV and listening to games on radio, it all really kind of becomes second nature. And then we just listen to that anthem and get ready to play ball.
So a team like Colorado on opening day next Monday, how much do you take from spring training and what they're doing versus last year when you're getting your – do you have charts and boards, Bob, or do you just do it off of the top of your head?
It's pretty much off the top of the head. Now, my partner, Steve Berthume, he's very good on the computer, so I know he keeps a very extensive notebook on each team and each player on each team and what's going on with each individual guy. I tend to lean more on the regular season things that I saw last year as opposed to what I saw in spring training. You can garner information from what you see in spring training, but so many times, as we hear all the time, pitchers are working on a new pitch, or the hitters are working on something new.
Right.
There's a train in the background here. I'm standing outside the train station in Lake Forest, Illinois, so that's that noise, Brad. But
you're good.
I tend to rely more on what I saw during the regular season the year before. And then, once again, from talking to the opposing broadcasters, if Charlie Blackman, for example, is bunting more for base hits this year, I'll bring that up very early on in the ball game, just in case it comes up at some point in the game. But, we see Rockies, for example, 18 or 19 times every season. We see them a half a dozen times or more in spring training. So, I'd like to think when we play the Rockies, it's pretty much second nature. It's almost like watching your own team because we play them so often.
Mm. I'm curious, Bob, when you go to the manager and you have the manager or coaches meetings, because of your resume, you've played, you've managed, you've had great success. Are they easier to open up to you once you get started? Meaning when Chip first came on board, did he have to get to know you and you to get to know him in order to build that trust? Or was it instantaneous where he'll give you some information that he may not want others to have?
Well, I don't know that he'll give me information that he doesn't want others to have because, you know, managers are very close to the vest when it comes to inside information about their own team or about the other team.
Sure.
But what I've noticed is managers will say, you know, our bullpen's a little beat up. You know what that's like, Bob. You know, because I've been in that seat and I've managed a ball club at the major league level, all managers go through the same problems at some point during a season, whether it's good or bad. Everybody tends to have pretty much the same experiences, maybe at different times, maybe with different people. But, you know, everybody that's managing Major League Baseball has had a starter that had to come out of the game early and put a real strain on your bullpen. So now I'm wondering, geez, is my starter today going to be able to get me deep into the ball game? And if he doesn't, what am I going to do in the bullpen? So I think sometimes, you know, they give me answers based on the fact that I've been there and I've done that. So, and that's very helpful for me, you know, because I was in that seat and because I have had the good times and the bad times that every manager goes through. I think maybe most of them are a little more willing to open up to me than they maybe would to somebody else.
We're talking with Bob Brenly. Opening day is next week. He'll be doing the games, of course, on Fox Sports Arizona. I'm curious, too, Bob, through the years, have you had managers come to you and you've had their meetings where they've had that moment where you can tell they're beaten down, they're worn out, and they've asked you for advice on how to get through it?
Yeah, a few times, especially when I was working in Chicago. It seemed to be an annual thing at some point in the season, whether it was Lou Piniella or Dusty Baker or Mike Quadi. Geez, you know, what can we do? What can we do? What would you do? And, you know, I always say, you know, I'm not the right guy to ask. These are your players. You know them a lot better than I do. You're around them every day. You know what makes them tick. You know how to get the best out of them. And but that's a fairly common question. And I think back to the days when I was managing, I know that I used to ask guys, what would you do in this situation? But I usually got the same answer that I give.
How many managers, I'm curious, and I don't, if you don't know the answer, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, came from your coaching tree that were on your staff? I mean, obviously, Bo Mel.
I'm trying to think, you know, and some are indirectly from the same tree. Andy Green, you know, kind of is a guy that, and the thing back even farther, Brad, I go back to the Roger Craig tree. He's the guy, I think, that probably affected as many major league managers and coaches. If you look around the game, we have a few of them with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Joe Youngblood is our minor league hitting coach and outfield instructor. He was a Roger Craig disciple. Mike Aldretti, who for a long time was the bench coach in St. Louis, he was a Roger Craig disciple. You mentioned Bob Melvin, Robbie Thompson, who's worked a variety of jobs in the front office and on the field. And I'm sure I'm missing some others.
Dusty would be in that, right? Dusty would be in there.
Oh, sure, sure. Dusty Baker Dusty played for Roger Craig. And, you know, it just speaks to the what Roger knew about the game and his ability to impart that to his players in a way that they felt like they were learning something and not being scolded.
No, that's good. Zach Greinke, how do you go about preparing for him for opening day? I had some interesting conversations with some analysts who said he's going to be better in Arizona because in L.A. there was a lot of things other than baseball that are just distracting, kind of like when he was in Kansas City and Milwaukee. It's a two-part question there. Do you agree with that on Greinke, one? And two, how do you go about preparing for him on opening day?
Well, I do think he's going to possibly, I didn't think I'd ever say this, but he might have a better year this year than he did last year. And last year was off the charts. And I base that on the fact that I think our offense is much better and much more consistent than the Dodgers' offense last year. I know for a fact that our defense is far superior to the defense that he had behind him in Los Angeles. So you put those two things together, and providing he stays healthy and does what he's always done throughout his career, it's not out of the question. This guy could have just ridiculous Cy Young caliber numbers this season. And as far as preparing, you know, once again, we saw plenty of Zach Greinke over the last few years pitching for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any surprises. I don't think he's going to do anything different. He's going to execute his game plan. He's going to command the ball on both sides of the plate. He's going to go after hitters' weaknesses, and he's going to compete. I mean, that's one of the things, because he's kind of a quiet guy and, you know, doesn't really call a lot of attention to himself. Don't mistake that for him not being a competitor, because he likes to get after it. He likes to go out there and I don't want to say embarrass the other team, but he wants to beat them, and he wants to beat them badly.
What about Wellington Castillo or the catcher in all of this with Greinke?
Well, I think Wellington's going to have a great year. He, you know, I was with Wellington in Chicago, and he was just a young pup coming up to the major leagues, probably a little too soon. And I think it kind of got between his ears a little bit. It happens occasionally. You get big league-itis. And I think he thought, because he had made it to the big leagues, that his journey was done. And there were still a lot of aspects of his game that needed to be tightened up a little bit. And subsequently getting traded and then getting released. And all of a sudden you find yourself out there in no man's land. And he ends up in Arizona last year, where we desperately needed a starting catcher. And I think he realized that, you know, these opportunities to be a big league ball player, and especially to have a starting job, don't come along every day. And if I don't take advantage of this opportunity, I might not get another opportunity. So I think he has really turned the page. Mm. He's a much more serious, much more studious catcher now. He really works hard on the game plan against the opposing offense. And offensively, he's always been a force. He's always been a 15 to 25 homer guy.
Right.
That, you know, it can hit some big bombs when you need them the most.
You have an X factor this year, or do you not buy into X factors on baseball teams?
Well, I think if I had to buy into an X factor, it would be Osmani Tomas. You know, nobody quite knew what to expect from him last year. He kind of got a hall pass because of the length of the season compared to the length of the season in Cuba, and all the cultural change and new teammates, new country, new everything. But, you know, I think this year he looks much more comfortable, and we need him to be comfortable. We need him to play extremely well, because that's a very important position out there in left field, and we expect him to provide some power and play good defense out there. And, you know, fortunately there was some competition at that position with Socrates Brito jumping up and doing what he did. I've heard some rumors that Brandon Drury has been taking some reps out in left field, because he's swung the bat so well, you've got to find a place to play him.
Yep.
So I think if Tomas can jump up and be the guy they expect him to be, it certainly would make things a lot easier for the Diamondbacks in the National League West.
Last question for you. The state of the franchise, it appears that every arrow is pointing up, and you've been here, you've seen it through the years. Is there any reason to not believe or doubt that this is a team that can compete? As some are suggesting nationally, this is the Padres 2015. I disagree with that, because they threw money at a lot of positions. This was just a lot of money thrown at Greinke, and they gave up a steep price for Shelby Miller. I'll give them that, but I don't find that correlation to be true. What about you on the direction of the franchise?
I think the franchise is in great shape. I mean, even though they did give up some young talent to get Shelby Miller, there is still a plethora of young talent in this system. I mean, a lot of the deals that were made that kind of went under the radar, and guys that were supposed throw-ins on deals, I think a lot of those guys are going to end up being really good Major League Baseball players. Mm. You know, and Tony La Russa has said, we're not just going for it this year. You know, obviously they are hoping to win this year, but there is so much young talent in the system that, hopefully, avoiding any kind of major injuries, there should be a steady flow of major league talent coming to the Diamondbacks for years to come. And that's the ultimate goal. I mean, you like to win a World Series. That's great. That's what everybody wants to do. But, you know, the ultimate goal, I think, is to have a system like the Atlanta Braves had back in the 80s when they were in the postseason every year. That's the goal for the Diamondbacks. They want to compete in the postseason every year.
Safe travels. I'll see you on opening day. Appreciate the time as always, Bob. Thanks.
All right, big guy. Thanks, Brad.
Bob Brenly with us. Appreciate his time as always. John Wilner on the other side from the Wilner Hotline. College football, basketball writer for the San Jose Mercury News. But the Wilner Hotline is a must-follow on Twitter. He's really plugged in around the conference. Very opinionated as well. Want to get his view on Herb Sendek going up to Santa Clara. That's right in his backyard. And then a lot of college football, spring football workouts from John Wilner. That's next. Sports 360 AZ, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. We partner with Fox Sports tonight. Brad Sismat, Football AZ. Brock Huard will be with us tonight. Also, our recruiting roundup. Brock breaking down the quarterbacks in this year's draft. And then the Brad Sismat Baseball AZ on six different Fox Sports Net affiliates in our last week of spring training shows. As promised now, John Wilner is with us. And John Wilner is somebody that you need to follow on Twitter. I'll do this occasionally, but not always. It's at Wilner Hotline. Very smart takes on what's going on in the conference of Pac-12, not just basketball, but football. We'll get to football in a minute. John also writes for the San Jose Mercury News. And he joins us to start with. First, I appreciate you coming on, John. And let's go with Herb Sendek first and foremost. We saw Herb here be a beaten-down coach by the end of his run at Arizona State, like the guys before him. This, I think, is a really good X and O hire up there. What's the feeling in the Bay Area about Herb Sendek?
Well, the people in the Bay Area who are paying attention to Santa Clara basketball, which is not very many, are very excited. You know, this is a guy, they haven't been in the NCAA tournament since Steve Nash played for him. It's been 20 years, and, you know, Herb's been he's won tournament games with three different teams basically in that same span. So for Santa Clara, a program like Santa Clara to get a coach like Herb Sendek is a pretty big coup for them. And I think we'll, you know, over time make them much more relevant in the WCC and help them try to kind of gain ground on Gonzaga and St. Mary's and BYU.
And you've got a good background there with Cal and their tournament run. You have a new coach over at Stanford and you've got good players up there. So he's in a community, and of course the Warriors doing what they're doing, where basketball is on the fronts of people's minds. I would think it's a perfect time for him to get there.
Well, I mean, Santa Clara has been, you know, they've struggled for a long time, and they're kind of off the radar here. This is, you know, it's a lot like Phoenix, Bay Area, in terms of being mostly a pro sports market, and you've got to be really good. If you're a college team, you've got to be really good to get on the radar. Stanford football has been on the radar the last few years. Cal basketball this year was kind of on the radar a little bit, especially at the end of the season. So, but for Santa Clara, it's tough. He's got a lot of work to do to catch up to you know, the likes of Gonzaga. But, you know, I think Herb is, and I've been following his career for 20 years, since his Miami, Ohio team knocked out Arizona in the tournament. And he's a very, very good coach. And for them, he's a great hire.
Talking about John Wilner. And, of course, you can follow John on Twitter at Wilner Hotline. He's also with the San Jose Mercury News and follows the Pac-12 basketball and football. Let's turn our attention over to spring football workouts. And a lot of quarterbacks that are being looked at throughout the conference. That's the case for many springs, but this year by, what is it, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, USC, ASU, U of A is kind of up in the air with Solomon and his concussion stuff. What do you make out of spring football and the quarterback derby that's most interesting to you in the Pac-12 right now here in spring, John?
Well, I would say, I mean, it's easier to figure out who doesn't have a quarterback competition than who does, because basically it's the Washington schools and UCLA have no issues at quarterback. All the other nine schools have got some kind of question, whether it's a veteran who has not been healthy like Arizona, or you've got a bunch of players competing to take over from a departed senior, or you're counting on a transfer to come in like Oregon, for instance, or Colorado. I happen to think that the Oregon situation is worth watching. You know, they hit it right getting Vernon Adams as a transfer last year from Eastern Washington, and now they've gone that route again with Dakota Puka from Montana, and, you know, we'll see if he has the same success. And if he does, then Oregon could be the team to beat. And if he doesn't, then things are going to be a little bit wide open. But that one's real interesting to me, and also the situation at USC, just because it's USC, and if they get good quarterback play, they're going to be a threat.
The program that you look at and say, this is going to be a make-or-break year for this coach in the Pac-12?
Make-or-break, Mike McIntyre at Colorado. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Gary Anderson at Oregon State's in a little bit of the same situation, because it was so bad last year in his first year. If they don't have some significant improvement, he's just going to be in such a gutter there that it's going to be hard to climb out of. You know, Sonny Dykes at Cal just got an extension, but I think it's You know, I don't think the heat is totally off of him. Not that he's necessarily going to get fired at the end of the season, but you know, if they revert to where they were the previous couple of years, you know, his job security is going to just kind of remain clouding that program. And certainly Clay, you know, Helton at SC, just because it's SC, and a lot of SC fans didn't think he necessarily deserved to get the job when he did, and that they took the easy way to promote him instead of going through a national search. So there's plenty of intrigue with some of the coaches.
Are we at the point now, John, where every year we're going to wonder if David Shaw is going to the NFL? And in your view, you see him up close and personal. Is he one of the top couple coaches in the nation?
Well, I mean, I don't. The people who know Shaw don't think it's an every year thing at all. There's no indication that he's ready to move. I don't think he's going to be at Stanford forever, but I think he's going to be at Stanford for a while, 5-10 years. You know, maybe when his kids are much older. But there's zero chance of him leaving Stanford in the next few years. And it's a good conversation piece nationally. And, you know, he's well-regarded, and it seems like a natural fit in the NFL because Stanford plays an NFL style. But, you know, for those who know Shaw, it's not an issue. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. He wouldn't even interview with the 49ers, so that should tell you something.
Apologies for stepping on you there. In the terms of – we're sitting here coming up to the 1st of April, but as I sit here and look at the landscape – I thought Christian McCaffrey got hosed in the Heisman last year. I didn't see a better player across the nation. He's right there in your own backyard. Where is he at nationally coming into this year's Heisman from your view?
Well, he's probably you know, near the top, but it's a loaded Heisman field. It's one of the best returning Heisman fields I can remember. I mean, you know, Deshaun Watson at Clemson might be considered the favorite only because he's a quarterback, and because Clemson is, you know, going to be a top 2 or 3 team, probably. I mean, Baker Mayfield's coming back, and Fournette's coming back, and McCaffrey's coming back. I mean, it is Rosen at UCLA will get some support. It is Royce Freeman, the Oregon running back, too. It is just a stacked field. And McCaffrey's issue, he's going to have two problems. One is that the bar was set so high last year when he broke Barry Sanders' all-purpose record that even if he leads the country in rushing, it could be viewed as a disappointing season if he doesn't top what he did, not rushing, but all-purpose yards. The other issue he's got is he's got a new quarterback and the left side of his offensive line is rebuilt. So it's going to be easier for teams to just completely key on him and dare Stanford to beat them some other way. When that happened this past year, they had a senior quarterback who did a pretty good job of shredding defenses. So it's going to be 1 against 11 and with a stratospheric expectations. And that's going to make it difficult, I think, for McCaffrey, even though he's got, unlike last year, he's going to enter the season with a lot of name recognition and he won't be a dark horse candidate. It's still going to be real tough given the bar he set for himself.
Good stuff. Good insight, John. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's John Wilner, college football, basketball writer, San Jose Mercury News. You can follow him on Twitter, Wilner, WILNER hotline. Really good stuff there from John on day in, day out basis. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. That is AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our site right now at sports360AZ.com. If you missed Jerry Colangelo yesterday on Dan Marley and his future at Grand Canyon University, you might want to check that column out. Eric posted it earlier today. And there's recruiting news that's up there on the high school platform and on the pro front as well. I've got a column up on the stadium issue and some zip codes and street addresses you should look at that the Diamondbacks are considering as they go through their stadium hunt, search, negotiation, however you want to term it. Thanks for being with us.